Well, good afternoon, gentlemen, and thank you for joining me here on It's About Florida. Today we are talking about three issues which sort of flow one into another, and that is ethics reform, campaign finance reform, and elections reform. We have on the line here Mr. Dan Krasner, who directs the Integrity Florida Group. Mr. Krasner, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Lynn. Good to be with you.
Wonderful. And we have Mr. Damian Filer here from Progress Florida.
Thanks for having me.
And we have Mr. Phil Claypool here, who is a former member of the Ethics Board.
Right. I was the executive director and general counsel of the Florida Ethics Commission until I retired in 2011.
Wonderful. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me. So I want to start on that issue. Both the House and Senate have made ethics reform a priority, and I want to start off with the reason of why. I had a conversation with Senate President Don Gates, and he really said that this year was ripe for that. Both he and Speaker Weatherford really felt that this would be a priority this year. And we know that we've had issues arising with lawmakers in the past that really kind of triggered this. You talk about former speakers having to step down. Talk about some of those things that kind of led up to this conversation that we're having here.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, as you allude to, and these, unfortunately, these things are not in the past. We've just had the lieutenant governor of Florida step down, and we currently don't have a lieutenant governor because of that issue. And the last time ethics reform in a meaningful way came up, and Dan can talk more to this, we had another issue with the lieutenant governor of Florida. More recently than that, we've had Speaker Ray Sansom, who also left office under a cloud, to be sure. But the real important thing, I think, to focus on here is how many situations that we have that really haven't been thoroughly looked at that are currently going on. So let me just give you one example of that. The House Majority Leader, Steve Precourt, is moving a bill, House Bill 655, this year that would have the purpose of which is to preempt any local government from enacting their own ordinances. And the focus of it is to kill an ordinance that was proposed by Citizen Initiative in Orange County to provide earned sick time for the workers in that county. It should have been on the 2012 ballot. The county commission there defied their own charter to keep it off. And while that commission meeting was happening in last September, where they should have referred it to the ballot, Steve Precourt was in that room, and he was involved in what's called the Textgate scandal, where lobbyists were texting with the members of the commission. One of those people that was in that Textgate scandal was Lou Oliver, who's the chairman of the Republican Party in Orange County. And his comment to the commissioners at the time was specifically, he said, just delay this long enough that Tallahassee can provide the kill shot. Meaning that if you don't put this on the ballot this year, we'll make sure it never goes on the ballot. Well, Disney was also one of the key interests that was involved in trying to stop that ordinance from ever making it on the ballot. If you take a look at Precourt's business, he currently has a lobbying business that has had close ties over the years with Disney. And here he is as the majority leader of the Florida House right now moving this legislation that is the kill shot that will, if it passes this year, ensure that over 52,000 citizens in Orange County who should have had their day at the ballot box will never have that opportunity. These are the kind of things that if we had meaningful ethics reform and an ethics commission that really had teeth and could look into these types of things, I would like to think we would be looking into them now.
So, Mr. Filer, you say that there's a clear conflict of interest in that. So now I'm going to ask the question to Phil. So what would happen? Do we have any way to address this kind of thing, or is this one example of something that would basically go off without a consequence?
Right now, the law regarding the State Ethics Commission is the same as it's been since 1975, which is they can only investigate when they receive a written sworn complaint about a particular situation. Both the House and the Senate ethics bills would change that slightly and allow the commission to investigate on referrals that would come, for example, from the governor or FDLE or a state attorney. But there's nothing in the works currently that would allow the Ethics Commission to initiate an investigation on its own.
So what are we looking at when we start talking about the proposals in the legislature right now dealing with ethics reform? There includes changes to when lawmakers can amend their campaign finance reports.
Well, there are two bills, one in the House and one in the Senate. The Senate bill passed out on the first day of session, I mean, which will tell you what kind of priority that has on the part of the Senate president. I've in the years and years I was with the Ethics Commission trying to lobby these things through. We never got them done until the very end of the session, and here the Senate's bill is out early. So that really should give people an idea of the priority on that. That's the good side. And like I say, it would the Senate bill contains several provisions that there would be steps forward, I think, for the state of Florida. They would address situations like, I think, concerned many people about former Speaker Ray Sansom and try to put an ethics provision in that would stop that kind of situation where a public official would be able to take advantage of an elected position in order to get employment with some other public agency. Both bills would mandate 4 hours of ethics training on the part of elected public officials. Both bills would help the Ethics Commission collect these old financial disclosure fines that have proved so troublesome for the commission. And both of them would improve enforcement of executive branch lobbyist laws too. However, for every step forward, there seems to be the possibility anyway of a step backward in these bills. And so Progress Florida, Integrity Florida, excuse me, and some other folks have really worked hard along with, I believe, the Ethics Commission and some of their members to improve the bills. But currently, you have situations where the Ethics Commission would be limited in its ability to go after financial disclosure filings. You'd have situations where the Ethics Commission would be limited in its ability to investigate complaints as well. You have issues regarding gifts that may or may not be worked out ultimately because – and that'll get into your elections law issues because both chambers are looking at political committees and what they can do in these committees of continuous existence known as CCEs and the sort of general impression I think that folks have out there if they know much about those is the idea that they may be conceived as unlimited slush funds.
Hold that thought, and I want to jump to Dan here. Mr. Krasner, are you there?
I'm here.
You guys did a report to piggyback off of something that Phil talked about briefly that dealt with uncollected ethics violations and fines. And I'm curious where are we in the collections process? I know me and Mr. Claypool were talking about that a little earlier, but I wanted to get your perspective on this issue.
Presently, the Florida Ethics Commission is writing off hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines owed for ethics violations when officials fail to file their financial disclosure forms that they have to file each year or if they file them late. Just last year, the Florida Commission on Ethics wrote off more than $800,000 owed to the people of Florida from officials that failed to file financial disclosure forms or filed them late. The Senate and the House ethics proposals would strengthen fine enforcement. The Senate proposal goes farther. It would allow garnishment of wages from officials still receiving a government paycheck, along with liens on real property. The House proposal weakens that provision and does not have as tough a fine enforcement mechanism.
What has happened to make enforcement of our laws so difficult, especially when it comes into collecting on some of those outstanding balances?
I'll try to keep this as short as possible. But historically, the Ethics Commission conceived of a process because they were only getting 90 or 92% financial disclosure filings in on time. So what they tried to create was a parking ticket type of approach on just financial disclosure filings, not on other ethics violations. And so the law was changed so that if you The forms are due by July the 1st. If they're not in by September 1st, a fine starts to accrue at the rate of $25 a day. And there's regular notices sent out by the Ethics Commission to people whose forms haven't been received. Those fines cap at $1,500. And so we get a fair amount of money from that. I think most importantly, if you look at the Ethics Commission's rate of return on this, really, they're up to over 99% compliance. So the good news is that over 99% of public officials in Florida are actually filing by that September 1st date now, whereas it used to be 90 or 92%. The bad news was that the people could get away without paying their fines because the only authority the Ethics Commission had to collect them was to send them to the Department of Financial Services, where they'd then be referred to collection agencies. That worked for some of those fines, but over the years, the amounts that were unpaid just continued to grow. Ultimately, the law was changed for not only the Ethics Commission but all state agencies, and those fines then were sent back from the CFO's office back to every agency to collect. And so the Ethics Commission, like all these other agencies, found themselves with fines that might be 8 or 10 years old that could not be collected because the statute of limitations of 4 years had already run.
You're listening to It's About Florida. We're discussing legislative efforts to clean up Florida's ethics, elections, and campaign finance laws with former Ethics Commission Executive Director Phil Claypool, Progress Florida's Damian Filer, and Integrity Florida's Dan Krasner. Now back to our conversation. So, Mr. Krasner, what do you think the legislature is doing that is going to be good policy related to ethics reform, and what area would you say lawmakers should look into strengthening? And I'm going to ask this question on everybody. So we're going to start with Dan.
The most important policy proposal that our lawmakers could move forward on, which they've failed to do just yet, is to join the 30 other states that have ethics commissions with the law enforcement authority to initiate ethics complaints on their own. 30 other states are already utilizing stronger ethics law enforcement agencies than Florida. It's time to join those 30 other states.
And Mr. Filer, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would very much agree with Dan's points here. When you look at the fact that Florida is the most corrupt state in the nation, I hate to be cynical, but after working in politics in Florida for many years, the fact of the matter is that politicians are going to act not because it's the right thing to do, but because there's enough political and public pressure for them to be in a compromised position politically if they don't do something to address it. The concern here is that they will put up window dressing instead of enacting meaningful reform. And I know you wanted to talk a bit about election reform, but it's a good example, if I could segue to it briefly here. Which state was the only state in the country that still didn't have their act together on election night and couldn't report their results for days until after the election ended? It was Florida. And the reason for that is because there was a lot of window dressing put up after the 2000 election. And then later there was actual meaningful reform that was undone by this governor and legislature. A lot of the things that had actually made our elections work more smoothly were taken away. And so now when we look at the election reform proposals that are on the table this year, there's a similar dynamic going on where there's kind of a one step forward, two step back kind of dance happening. Politicians want to get credit for having addressed a problem and taking responsibility for something, and they will go as far as they feel that they need to change public perception. But what we really want to concentrate on here and make sure happens during this unique opportunity in this window of time during this legislative session on ethics reform, on election reform, is to make sure that the reforms are really substantive and that they're not undercutting themselves, with the other hand, so to speak.
Phil, your thoughts. How are we doing here with these bills in the House and Senate?
Well, I think it's about time that Florida at the state level has begun to catch up with the concerns of local folks. Over the last few years, we've seen major pushes toward more transparency and ethics and accountability at the local level of government. You've seen it in Broward County, Palm Beach County, Jacksonville, and now Tallahassee's looking at it as well. Those voices didn't seem to resonate at all at the state level. until now. And I think now is an opportunity for people to really put their voices forward to their elected representatives and take advantage of this new interest and try to push for real meaningful reform that doesn't at the same time take a step backwards as well in some respects.
Damian, you talked about the issues related to elections, and let's go ahead and get into that because now we're talking about elections policy reform, which is the way that we run them, and then the separate issue is how candidates raise money and fund their campaigns. Mm-hmm. In 2010, I believe, is when Florida passed its elections code overhaul. And that dealt with scaling back early voting days. It talked a lot about how people were awarded or granted ballots at the polls. Did they have a valid driver's license? Can they change their addresses on election day? And a lot of people have cited this particular law as leading to the problems that the state experienced in November, especially in several South Florida counties, Miami-Dade, Desaline Victor, I believe is the woman's name, mm-hmm. who was held up as kind of the example of Florida's elections problems. Now lawmakers are looking to basically reverse a lot of those changes. Where are we now?
Well, we're in a very similar posture as we are with ethics reform, where there are a few critical components that have not yet been addressed that don't appear to be moving in either chamber that are really going to be critical in order to make sure that we don't find ourselves in that same boat again. So a couple of examples there. One is that we haven't done anything to really address putting back in place the amount of access to early voting. We really should have 14 full days of early voting with 12 hours of access every day.
Isn't that optional now, to let counties basically decide whether or not they want to go the full 14?
But that really puts the onus, I think, in many cases on a local supervisor who may not have the resources provided to them to be able to provide that level of early voting. And so we really feel that that should be that there should be uniformity about that statewide. Another piece that I think is really important that always used to be the case in Florida, if you look at this last election cycle, there were 11 constitutional amendments on the ballot. All 11 were put there by the legislature. If they had been put there, if any of them had been put there by citizens, the citizens' initiative would have been restricted to a 75-word cap on the summary that appeared on the ballot. The legislature had no cap. And so what we saw were record-long ballots, page after page after page, that people had to wade through. We really believe that the legislature, as they always had prior to the change in the law, I think it was in 2011, that they should be held to that same cap. And that's another example of something that we're really not seeing yet moving in the elections legislation. And the final point that I'll make is it's critically important. We have a very mobile populace and electorate in Florida. We have a lot of young people, for example, who may, you know, let's say you live in – you're from Orlando. Your family is there, but you attend Florida State University in Tallahassee. People should be able to change their registration at the polls on election day.
We've seen over the past few years as each election cycle comes, more and more money comes into the process. And last year, last cycle, we saw record spending from outside groups, and a lot of it coming from, as Mr. Claypool talked about, these CCEs, these Committees of Continuing Existences. Dan?
Okay. So there's always cracks in the system, ways for money to flow in like water. So the lawmakers are considering, should the $500 limit on candidate accounts be raised? The Senate and Governor Scott appear to want to maintain the current caps on candidate accounts. The House is more inclined to raise what you can give directly to a candidate. Integrity Florida has recommended that campaign contribution limits be completely eliminated because we need to stop the shell game. Let's have full 24-hour disclosure. And if we had candidates raising and spending their own money, they'd be more accountable. We'd hear, "I approve this message" more often. That's what we need to see. The present system just appears like money laundering. It'll continue the same way if we pretend to have caps on some accounts but unlimited flow of money through others. The corrupting influence of money in politics is the defining issue of our time. But there's not a way to get the money out. So let's just put sunlight on it, and let's lift these artificial caps that just aren't working. Integrity Florida would recommend lifting the contribution limit and having 24-hour disclosure.
Mr. Filer, would you guys agree with that?
Well, I think that the broader context that I would share with you is that if you look at what's happening right now and what happens every legislative session in the halls of the Capitol is that we're supposed to have a government of, by, and for the people, not the corporate lobbyists. And all too often what we see is that the real priority legislation, the bills that are filed and passed, the ones that are killed, track much more closely with where these large corporate contributions are coming from, not where public opinion is. So I'll give you a couple of examples of things that we're seeing right now. There have been a number of polls done right around the time that the session started about whether Floridians support the idea of expanding Medicaid health care coverage to 1 million people who currently don't have access to health care coverage in Florida. And overwhelmingly, the American Cancer Society poll, the Florida Hospital Association poll, both of them showed that two out of three Floridians, an overwhelming majority, say yes, that's what we should be doing. And yet when you go up to the Capitol now, there's all kinds of foot dragging and machinations going on that that at the end of the day do not look like that's the direction that we're headed in. I think that at the end of the day, what we really need when it comes to campaign finance reform, I would absolutely agree with Dan that we need accountability, we need sunshine on these things. We need for to have a system where the politicians are accountable to their constituents and not to their large donors.
We still have about 4 weeks left in this legislative session. How would you grade the legislature when it comes to ethics, elections, and campaign finance? If you could give them a letter grade, what would you give them so far? Mr. Filer?
You know, we are about halfway through. We still have an opportunity. And I would say, I mean, if you want to hold me to a letter grade right now as kind of a midterm, I'll give them a C and say that, you know, I'll give them credit for starting the process on things like ethics and election reform. But I think right now, if the bills that we have right now pass, that would be very disappointing. We have a long way to go on both fronts, and I think that we have ample time to get the work done and to end the session with an A+ in both of those categories. I think that we really, as the public, what our job here is to really make sure that they know that we're watching and hold their feet to the fire and that we won't end up giving them a passing grade for something that really isn't meaningful reform.
Mr. Krasner, your thoughts?
The letter grade that's most important is a national report card online at stateintegrity.org/Florida. This was a collaborative effort between Global Integrity, the Center for Public Integrity, and Public Radio International. Florida received a failing grade for ethics enforcement agencies on this national report card. So nationally, Florida is known as a state that is failing in ethics enforcement. And the legislation that's pending, I'll give our lawmakers an A for effort because it's been 36 years since our state legislature has seriously moved toward a comprehensive ethics reform bill. But I would point them to that report card that indicates that Florida needs to give our state ethics commission the authority that 30 other states already have to initiate ethics complaints and investigations on their own. Let's join those 30 other states. That will move Florida on a national report card by state integrity investigation from an F grade to an A for ethics enforcement.
And Mr. Claypool.
I have to agree with with the other guys here. At the moment, we're hopefully moving from an F, where we've been for the last few years, especially in terms of legislative activity in the ethics arena, and probably at a C right now. But they definitely have the opportunity to move that up to an A if the people of Florida will actually start contacting their representatives and demand this. They do respond to the people. When they hear enough from the people, they will respond to that. And I think that's the task that we all have.
I want to thank everyone for being able to join me. I really appreciate it. Thank you all once again for coming and for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks again to our guests. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. I'm Lynn Hatter. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance. Please join us again next week for more discussion on the issues impacting our state.